This is VOA News. Reporting via remote, I'm Richard Green. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi addressed Taiwan's parliament on Wednesday, just hours after her arrival. Pelosi said in her speech that members of the U.S. Congress are eager to exchange views with their Taiwanese counterparts.
We want to increase interparliamentary cooperation and dialogue. And we do so at a time when our president has put forth an Asian Pacific initiative, which we support, and we want to be specific in terms of how we work with Taiwan in that regard.
Pelosi is the highest-ranking American official in 25 years to visit the self-ruled island claimed by China, which quickly announced it would conduct military maneuvers in retaliation for her presence. Her visit has ratcheted up tensions between Beijing and Washington. Pelosi, a Democrat, is getting a rare show of support for her Taiwan trip from Republican senators. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Missouri's Roy Blunt says he'd never use these four words in a row in this way.
Speaker Pelosi was right.
Echoing Senate GOP Chief Mitch McConnell in backing Pelosi's trip over Chinese objections.
I welcome the Speaker's display of support for Taiwan's democracy.
They were among more than two dozen Republicans issuing a statement of rare bipartisan support for Pelosi. Among those not in favor, Mitt Romney, who doesn't see the point of going, adding it's not a great time to be trying to poke a stick in anyone's eye, given Russia's Ukraine invasion. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The United States announced Tuesday the sale of major missile defense systems to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates worth more than $5 billion. This is VOA News. The approval was announced 2 weeks after U.S. President Joe Biden met leaders of the two countries in Saudi Arabia. The trip was seen as crucial to strengthen trade relations with the two nations and as both nations perceive a heightened threat from Iran. The U.S. State Department said Saudi Arabia would buy hundreds of Patriot missile systems, which can be used to bring down long-range incoming ballistic and cruise missiles, as well as attacking aircraft. Saudi Arabia has faced recent rocket threats from Yemen's Houthi rebels, who have been supplied with Iranian equipment and technology. The United Nations announced Tuesday that Yemen's warring parties have agreed to extend a four-month-long truce just hours before it was due to expire. Yemen has been gripped by conflict since the Iran-backed Houthi rebels took control of the capital Sana'a in 2014, triggering Saudi-led military involvement in support of the government the following year. Hundreds of thousands have died directly from fighting as well as indirectly, and millions have been displaced in what the UN calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The U.S. State Department Tuesday warned Americans traveling abroad they face an increased risk of violence after U.S. forces killed al-Qaeda chief Ayman al-Zawahiri. His death in a drone strike in Kabul over the weekend dealt the biggest blow to al-Qaeda since the killing of Osama bin Laden in 2011. U.S. President Joe Biden called the action that justice had been delivered. Following the strike, the U.S. State Department Tuesday urged Americans to maintain a high level of vigilance and practice good situational awareness when traveling abroad. The U.S. Senate has approved a bill to expand benefits to military personnel exposed to toxic burn pits. AP correspondent Mike Garcia reports.
They celebrated outside the U.S. Capitol Tuesday night. The Senate overwhelmingly approved legislation enhancing health care and disability benefits for the millions of veterans who were exposed to toxic burn pits. Senator John Tester of Montana chairs the Veterans Affairs Committee.
I just want to tell you that there's a lot of times it doesn't feel good in the United States Senate. It feels good right now.
President Joe Biden strongly backed the legislation, which includes 10 years of enhanced health care coverage for discharged vets who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and directs the VA to presume certain respiratory illnesses and cancers were related to burn pit exposure. Mike Garcia, Washington.
The Senate had overwhelmingly approved the legislation once before, but the process briefly derailed last week when the Republicans made a last attempt to change the bill. The objections delayed final passage, infuriating veterans groups and advocates. Recapping our top story, U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi addressed Taiwan's parliament on Wednesday, just hours after her arrival. For more on this and all the stories we're covering, visit us at voanews.com. Reporting via remote, I'm Richard Green for...
¶¶ Today is Wednesday, August 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Duafo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, EU member states blast Russia's invasion of Ukraine at a UN non-nuclear proliferation conference.
We are facing a totally unprovoked and unjustified military aggression against Ukraine carried out by Russia, a permanent member of the UN Security Council.
U.S. House Speaker lands in Taiwan, defying warnings by China of a military response.
The plane carrying Speaker Pelosi's delegation landed in Taiwan late Tuesday. A warm welcome spread across Taipei's iconic skyscraper.
And Yemen's warring parties agreed to renew an existing truce for another 2 months after concerted international efforts. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. EU member states stepped up their criticism of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on Tuesday during the UN's review conference of the parties to the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons. Poland has been one of the fiercest critics of Moscow. Deputy Foreign Minister Marcin Prasidas said Russia has, quote, no interest in nuclear disarmament, unquote. The treaty came into effect in 1970 and aims to prevent the spread of nuclear weapons and weapons technology, foster the peaceful use of nuclear energy, and further the goal of disarmament. Poland's Deputy Foreign Minister Marcin Prasidas.
We are facing a totally unprovoked and unjustified military aggression against Ukraine carried out by Russia, a permanent member of the UN Security Council, a nuclear weapons state party to the treaty. Russia is destroying the rules-based international order based on multilateralism. Russia has violated each and every human rights commitment. Its aggression against Ukraine is a clear example of an attempt to subjugate and destroy another state, characteristic to colonial thinking and its modus operandi. We should reconfirm that a world without nuclear weapons is possible only through effective, verifiable, and irreversible disarmament in line with Article 6 of the NPT. We cannot ignore today's security realities. Despite recent vocal claims by some, they do not produce true incentives for nuclear disarmament efforts. If you wage a large-scale war, as Russia does now, you show definitely no interest in nuclear disarmament.
That's Poland Deputy Foreign Minister Marcin Prasidas. The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe said on Tuesday it will continue supporting Ukraine on its path to security and stability. Current OSCE Chairman and Poland Foreign Minister Zbigniew Rau spoke during a new conference in Kyiv along the Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba. He said the organization was determined to remain present on the ground and help Ukraine in post-war rehabilitation and reconstruction. In April, an OSCE mission said it had found evidence of war crimes and crimes against humanity committed by Russia in Ukraine. Russia's mission to the OSCE called the report, quote, unfounded propaganda, unquote. OSCE Chairman Zbigniew Rau.
As the OSCE chair, together with the OSCE Secretary General, we have reassured Minister Kuleba that the OSCE will continue its assistance to Ukraine on its road to security and stability, no matter the circumstances. We are determined to remain present on the ground and support Ukraine in meeting the country's many challenges and help in its post-war rehabilitation and reconstruction. I am convinced the OSCE will play a key role in this endeavor.
That's Forish Polish Minister and current OSCE Chairman Zbigniew Rau. Since the start of the war in Ukraine, Moscow has done its best to suppress opposition inside Russia. VOA Russia has this story narrated by Anna Rice.
On July 14th, Russian President Vladimir Putin signed two bills into law. The first was called on control over the activities of persons under foreign influence. The second, on amending the Criminal Code of the Russian Federation and the Code of Criminal Procedures of the Russian Federation. Kremlin watchers say the foreign influence law is vaguely worded and dramatically increases the government's power over Russian citizens and organizations. The new laws expanded the list of foreign agents to include TV host Tatiana Lazareva, bloggers Maxim Katz and Veronika Bielocerkovskaya, and opposition member Ilya Yashin, who is in a detention facility for speaking out against the war in Ukraine. The second law on criminal procedure that Putin signed on July 14th equates joining the enemy ranks during military activity to high treason, with a maximum 20-year prison sentence. Vitoshkina says that since 2017, it's become a trend in Russia to accuse scientists of treason. In 2021, Viktor Kudryavtsev, a researcher at a Russian rocket and spacecraft center, died while under investigation. And Dmitry Kolker, a scientist from Novosibirsk, was arrested on suspicion of treason, taken from hospital to a detention facility, and died 4 days later of advanced pancreatic cancer. The Russian government is presenting these legal changes as necessary measures to protect Moscow from foreign influence and to maintain national security during a time of war. VOA News, Washington.
A U.S. congressional delegation led by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has arrived in Taiwan, defying warnings by China which has threatened a military response. The threats are raising fears of new crisis in the Taiwan Strait, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul, South Korea.
The plane carrying Speaker Pelosi's delegation landed in Taiwan late Tuesday. A warm welcome spread across Taipei's iconic skyscraper. But from Beijing, a very different message. China's military released threatening video showing recent drills, apparently simulating an invasion. China this week stepped up military exercises near Taiwan. Analysts expect those drills to intensify in the coming days, raising fears of a miscalculation. Pelosi is making the highest level U.S. visit to Taiwan in 25 years. In 1997, then House Speaker Newt Gingrich also visited Taiwan and Beijing. Gingrich recently told VOA he thinks Pelosi's trip will only amount to an irritation to U.S.-China ties.
So I think this is at one level a lot of noise about nothing. I think she holds her ground, and if the Biden administration doesn't act timidly and almost cowardly, I think everything will be fine. She'll go and be a nice event.
Taiwan residents, who are accustomed to threats from China, have mixed feelings. A large portion are relieved at the prospect of U.S. support. Many fear what is to come, not just this week, but in the months and years ahead, as China gets more powerful and more threatening. Bill Gallo, VOA News.
Thank you, Bill. The World Health Organization is urgently appealing for $123.7 million to provide emergency aid for millions of people facing an unprecedented food and health crisis in the Horn of Africa. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN aid agencies report more than 80 million people in the Greater Horn of Africa are facing a level of hunger not seen in decades. They warn up to 20 million people, about half children, already are on the verge of starvation across Somalia, Ethiopia, and Kenya. WHO Assistant Director General for Emergencies Response, Ibrahima Sosefal, says this acute food insecurity crisis also has triggered a health crisis in the region. He says malnutrition is soaring and disease outbreaks, including measles and cholera, are increasing. Speaking on a line from Dakar, Senegal, Fall says the important role health plays in the response to famine crises often goes under-recognized. Consequently, he says, health care is less available just when people need it most.
It is very unfortunate that people's access to health care is more restricted because they are on the move in search of food, water, pressure, and they may also have to make hard choices like between buying food and going to see a doctor.
Fall says WHO's multi-million dollar appeal will be used to prop up the healthcare systems in seven affected countries: Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan, and Uganda. He says the focus of the appeal is to make sure severely malnourished children who are sick get the care they need.
The level of vaccination has dropped out because of the insecurity, the displaced population, and of course the disruption of vaccination during the COVID pandemic. So more children are at risk and are already dying. We are already in the health crisis. It's not only a nutrition crisis. The number of children dying from diseases. So the situation is already catastrophic, and we need to act now.
Fall notes, the competition for dwindling resources has become more intense since war broke out in Ukraine in February. However, he says it is not conscionable for international donors to just fund the crisis in Ukraine and not act to prevent people from dying from hunger and disease in the Horn of Africa. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, the United Nations says Yemen's warring parties have agreed to renew an existing truce for another 2 months after concerted international efforts. The UN's envoy to Yemen said in a statement Tuesday that Yemen's internationally recognized government and the country's Hutu rebels pledge to try to work towards an expanded and longer ceasefire during the coming weeks. The ceasefire has been the first nationwide ease of fighting in the past 6 years of a conflict that turned into a proxy war between regional foes, Saudi Arabia and Iran. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Ethiopia's government and the rebel Tigray's People Liberation Front, or TPLF, are preparing for peace talks to end the conflict that broke out in November of 2020 in the town of Abala, badly damaged by the conflict. Militiamen and locals say they are ready for peace, but analysts say it won't come easy. Harry Wilkins reports from Abala, Ethiopia.
Abala is largely a ghost town. The streets are mostly empty, except for the burned-out cars and other evidence of war. The scene of intense fighting in late December, residents say Tigrayan forces fired at civilians from a ridge overlooking the town. Most residents fled, but since the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front left in April, a handful have returned. Faras Liali, a local militia leader who fought the TPLF, says the devastation caused by the war is far-reaching. He says people are not afraid of war now, but of famine. There is nothing to eat, and there are no markets or shops. There is great fear at the present time of starvation, and many families return to the town in confusion, not knowing what to do because of the lack of basic services in the city, he says. The residents say they are afraid of unexploded bombs too. Two boys showed VOA a pair of half-meter-high shells they found left in their home. Many people VOA spoke to in Abala and other surrounding towns said they did not care about the politics between the Ethiopian government and Tigray. They just want to return to normal life. Both sides have indicated they're ready to negotiate an end to Ethiopia's 21-month internal war. In June, the Ethiopian government said it had set up a committee for negotiations. The TPLF has said it is doing the same. Fasiha Askadom Tesama, a TPLF spokesperson, told VOA, however, he is no longer optimistic that talks will take place soon.
I cannot say that today, because at that time, we were told by interlocutors, countries like the United States, the African Union, all of them, that basic services will start any minute now. We were counting not days, but hours, that there will be some move. Now, it looks like the Addis Ababa government have decided against it.
The government has cut communications, banking services, fuel supplies, and prevented humanitarian aid from reaching Tigray. Analysts agree peace talks are unlikely to go ahead if those basic services are not restored. But even if that happens, there are still obstacles to overcome, say analysts. One is the size of Tigray's army and its ability to wage war against the government. William Davison is an analyst with International Crisis Group, a Belgian-based research group.
It's not clear that Tigray's leadership or its people would be willing to accept the downsizing, let alone the abolition of that force. But equally, it's not at all clear the federal government would accept Tigray to become a fully functioning part of the federation and its political system whilst it was still in possession of such a large and capable fighting force.
The TPLF has indicated it could try to separate from Ethiopia and form an independent state. Kiram Tedesi, a local analyst, does not think this is a good idea.
I think it's not a realistic option. We can simply take even Eritrea in practice. Eritrea left Ethiopia some three decades ago. and what it has been through is not as such, you know, praiseworthy.
Analysts also say which side takes control of the disputed region of West Tigray will play a major role in negotiations. The Ethiopian government did not respond to a request for interview. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Abala, Ethiopia.
The UN Refugee Agency said it would be forced to cut aid programs for millions of internally displaced people and refugees in the Democratic Republic of Congo without an immediate injection of money. Again, Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UNHCR says it has received only 19% of the $225 million required to run its humanitarian operation this year. That, it says, is not enough to meet the bare minimum, let alone respond to the growing protection and humanitarian needs of millions of people whose lives have been shattered by conflict and violence. The DRC is home to the biggest displacement crisis in Africa, with more than 5.6 million internally displaced people and over 500,000 refugees and asylum seekers. Director of the UNHCR's Division for External Relations, Dominique Hyde, has returned from a trip last week to strife-riven Ituri province in eastern DRC. She is shocked at the extent of loss and suffering experienced by survivors of ongoing fighting by the many armed groups in the province. She says she left feeling very angry at the impact the underfunding is having on the lives of the displaced people she met.
There wasn't a single internally displaced person that I met who hadn't suffered the loss of a family member. I'm meaning their children, their husband, their wives, or in the case of women who have not been the victims of sexual violence. We as UNHCR are providing mental health support and psychosocial support to these women, but honestly, we are only able to do the bare minimum.
She says the impact of underfunding is dire. She says the ability to respond to even the most basic needs and to provide safety and dignity to the families is not possible. Hyde says 82% of the country's internally displaced people will not receive adequate shelter.
This means that displaced women, children, men, boys will be forced to sleep in churches, in schools, in stadiums, out in the open, and or they're going to decide to go back to their homes and again being targets of these attacks. I met multiple people who had been displaced multiple times during their lives in the past years or so.
UNHCR warns it will be forced to cut cash and livelihood kits for agriculture, fisheries, and livestock if it does not receive additional support that it says will create food shortages for many people. Without more money, it says few refugee children will receive a primary education, which will have a lifelong detrimental effect. Agency officials say the war in Ukraine has taken the oxygen out of humanitarian appeals for Africa. They note international solidarity toward people fleeing war in Ukraine has been overwhelming. They add a similar response and more financial support also should be extended to all crises around the world. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Science in a Minute.
Soon after COVID-19 was declared a global pandemic in March 2020, researchers set out to determine the source of the virus that causes the disease. The SARS coronavirus 2 was first detected in Wuhan City, China, and was initially linked to living animals being sold at a local market. As the pandemic worsened, conspiracy theories of its origin spread in the media and on the internet. Among them was one that suggested the virus may have been weaponized and leaked from the nearby Wuhan Institute of Virology. Two new studies, one from the Scripps Research Institute and the other from the University of Arizona, suggest that the pandemic started as first thought at Wuhan's Wanan Seafood Market. They also propose the virus wasn't leaked from a laboratory or by any of the other scenarios. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the U.S. killing of al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri in Kabul in a drone strike is seen as a political win for President Joe Biden as we approach the grim anniversary of the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Following Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov's trip to Africa, senior U.S. officials plan to set the record straight. U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, and Secretary of State Antony Blinken travel to Uganda, Ghana, Rwanda, the DRC, and South Africa to counter Moscow's distorted narrative and renew ties with the continent. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
And to all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com, from voanews.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and television programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is committed to responsibly managing its relationship with the People's Republic of China by leading with diplomacy and keeping open channels of communication. To further this goal, Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with his counterpart, PRC State Councilor Wang Yi, for 5 hours on the sidelines of the recent G20 conference in Bali. After the meeting, Secretary Blinken told reporters the two talked about regional and global issues in which both countries had stakes, including the Kremlin's unprovoked war against Ukraine and North Korea's nuclear program. They also discussed areas where more cooperation between the PRC and the United States should be possible: the climate crisis, food security, global health, and counter-narcotics. The two leaders discussed areas of disagreement as well, said Secretary Blinken, including Beijing's increasingly provocative rhetoric and activity toward Taiwan, the PRC's repression of freedom in Hong Kong, forced labor, the treatment of ethnic and religious minorities in Tibet, and genocide in Xinjiang. Secretary Blinken also said he shared with State Councilor Wang the United States' concern over the PRC's alignment with Russia, despite the Kremlin's brutal war of choice against Ukraine. "What you hear from Beijing is that it claims to be neutral," he declared. "It's pretty hard to be neutral when it comes to this aggression. There is a clear aggressor. There is a clear victim. There is a clear challenge not only to the lives and livelihoods of people in Ukraine, but there is a challenge to the international order that China and the United States as permanent members of the Security Council are supposed to uphold." Secretary Blinken noted that in any case, the PRC's actions belie its claim to neutrality. Beijing and Moscow announced their no-limits partnership as Russia was amassing troops on Ukraine's border. In June, President Xi reaffirmed that he stands by that decision. In addition, Beijing continues to support Russia at the United Nations and other international organizations, and Beijing echoes and amplifies Russian propaganda around the world. Secretary Blinken categorized the meeting with State Councilor Wang as useful and constructive. He warned, however, this really is the moment where all have to stand up, as we heard country after country do in the G20, to condemn the Russian aggression.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.